She says, $10. And you better thank your stars it's $10, I says. Here, I says. I put the money order face down on the desk, holding my hand on it. Sign it.
Will you let me see it?
She says, I just want to look at it. Whatever it says, I won't ask for but $10.
You can have the rest. I just want to see it.
Not after the way you've acted, I says. You've got to learn one thing, and that is when I tell you to do something, you've got to do it. You sign your name on that line. She took the pen, but instead of signing it, she just stood there with her head bent and the pen shaking in her hand, just like her mother. Oh, God, she says. Oh, God. Yes, I says. That's one thing you'll have to learn if you never learn anything else. Sign it now and get on out of here. She signed it. Where's the money? She says. I took the order and blotted it and put it in my pocket. Then I gave her the $10. Now you go on back to school this afternoon, you hear? I says. She didn't answer. She crumpled the bill up in her hand like it was a rag or something and went on out the front door just as Earl came in. A customer came in with him and they stopped up front. I gathered up the things and put on my hat and went up front. Been much busy? Earl says. Not much, I says. He looked out the door. That your car over yonder? He says. Better not try to go out home to dinner. We'll likely have another rush just before the show opens. Get you a lunch at Rogers's and put a ticket in the drawer. Much obliged, I says. I can still manage to feed myself, I reckon. And right there he'd stay, watching that door like a hawk until I came through it again. Well, he'd just have to watch it for a while. I was doing the best I could. The time before, I says, that's the last one now. You'll have to remember to get some more right away. But who can remember anything in all this hurrah? And now this damn show had to come here the one day I'd have to hunt all over town for a blank check, besides all the other things I had to do to keep the house running, and Earl watching the door like a hawk. I went to the printing shop and told him I wanted to play a joke on a fellow, but he didn't have anything. Then he told me to have a look in the old opera house, where somebody had stored a lot of papers and junk out of the old Merchants and Farmers Bank when it failed. So I dodged up a few more alleys so Earl couldn't see me, and finally found old man Simmons and got the key from him and went up there and dug around. At last I found a pad on a St. Louis bank, and of course she'd pick this one time to look at it close. Well, it would have to do. I couldn't waste any more time now. I went back to the store. Forgot some papers. Mother wants to go to the bank, I says. I went back to the desk and fixed the check. Trying to hurry and all, I says to myself, it's a good thing her eyes are given out with that little whore in the house, a Christian, forbearing woman like Mother. I says, you know just as well as I do what she's going to grow up into, but I says, that's your business if you want to keep her and raise her in your house just because of Father. Then she would begin to cry and say it was her own flesh and blood, so I just says, all right, have it your way, I can stand it if you can. I fixed the letter up again and glued it back and went out. Try not to be gone any longer than you can help, Earl says. All right, I says. I went to the telegraph office. The smart boys were all there. Any of you boys made your million yet? I says. Who can do anything with a market like that? Doc says. What's it doing? I says. I went in and looked. It was 3 points under the opening. You boys are not going to let a little thing like the cotton market beat you, are you? I says. I thought you were too smart for that. Smart hell, Doc says. It was down 12 points at 12 o'clock. Cleaned me out. 12 points, I says. Why the hell didn't somebody let me know? Why didn't you let me know? I says to the operator. I take it as it comes in, he says. I'm not running a bucket shop. You're smart, aren't you? I says. Seems to me with the money I spend with you, you could take time to call me up. Or maybe your damn company's in a conspiracy with those damn Eastern Shocks. He didn't say anything. He made like he was busy. You're getting a little too big for your pants, I says. First thing you know, you'll be working for a living. What's the matter with you, Doc says? You're still 3 points to the good. Yes, I says, if I happen to be selling. I haven't mentioned that yet, I think. You boys all cleaned out? I got caught twice, Doc says. I switched just in time. Well, I.O. Snopes says, I've picked hit. I reckon 'tain't no more than fair for hit to pick me once in a while. So I left them buying and selling among themselves at a nickel a point. I found a nigger and sent him for my car and stood on the corner and waited. I couldn't see Earl looking up and down the street with one eye on the clock because I couldn't see the door from here. After about a week, he got back with it. Where the hell have you been? I says, riding around where the wenches could see you? I come straight as I could. He says I had to drive clean round the square with all them wagons. I never found a nigger yet that didn't have an airtight alibi for whatever he did, but just turn one loose in a car and he's bound to show off. I got in and went on around the square. I caught a glimpse of Earl in the door across the square. I went straight to the kitchen and told Dilsey to hurry up with dinner. "Quentin ain't come yet," she says. "What of it?" I says. "You'll be telling me next that Lester's not quite ready to eat yet. Quentin knows when meals are served in this house. Hurry up with it now." Mother was in her room. I gave her the letter. She opened it and took the check out and sat holding it in her hand. I went and got the shovel from the corner and gave her a match. "Come on," I says, "get it over with. You'll be crying in a minute." She took the match, but she didn't strike it. She sat there, looking at the check, just like I said it would be. "I hate to do it," she says, "to increase your burden by adding Quentin. I guess we'll get along," I says. "Come on, get it over with." But she just sat there, holding the check. "This one is on a different bank," she says. "They have been on an Indianapolis bank." "Yes," I says, "women are allowed to do that, too."
"Do what?" she says.
"Keep money in two different banks," I says.
"Oh," she says.
She looked at the check a while.
"I'm glad to know she has so much. God sees that I'm doing right," she says.
"Come on," I says, "finish it. Get the fun over."
"Fun?" she says. "When I thought you were burning this $200 a month for fun." I says, "Come on now, want me to strike the match?" "I could bring myself to accept them," she says. "For my children's sake, I have no pride."
"You'd never be satisfied," I says. "You know you wouldn't. You settled that once, let it stay settled. We can get along."
"I'll leave everything to you," she says, "but sometimes I become afraid that in doing this I am depriving you all of what is rightfully yours. Perhaps I shall be punished for it. If you want me to, I will smother my pride and accept them."
"What would be the good in beginning now when you've been destroying them for 15 years, I says. "If you keep on doing it, you have lost nothing. But if you'd begin to take them now, you'll have lost $50,000. We've got along so far, haven't we?" I says. "I haven't seen you in the poorhouse yet."
"Yes," she says, "we Bascoms need nobody's charity, certainly not that of a fallen woman."
She struck the match and lit the check and put it in the shovel, and then the envelope, and watched them burn.
"You don't know what it is," she says. "Thank God you will never know what a mother feels."
"There are lots of women in this world know better than her," I says.
"But they are not my daughters," she says. "It's not myself," she says. "I'd gladly take her back, sins and all, because she is my flesh and blood. It's for Quentin's sake."
Well, I could have said it wasn't much chance of anybody hurting Quentin much. But like I say, I don't expect much, but I do want to eat and sleep without a couple of women squabbling and crying in the house.
"And yours?" she says. "I know how you feel toward her."
"Let her come back," I says, "far as I'm concerned."
"No," she says, "I owe that to your father's memory."
"When he was trying all the time to persuade you to let her come home when Herbert threw her out?" I says.
"You don't understand," she says. "I know you don't intend to make it more difficult for me, but it's my place to suffer for my children," she says. "I can bear it."
"Seems to me you go to a lot of unnecessary trouble doing it," I says. The paper burned out. I carried it to the grate and put it in. "It just seems a shame to me to burn up good money," I says.
"Let me never see the day when my children will have to accept that, the wages of sin," she says. "I'd rather see even you dead in your coffin first."
"Have it your way," I says. "Are we going to have dinner soon?" I says, "because if we're not, I'll have to go on back. We're pretty busy today." She got up. "I've told her once," I says. "It seems she's waiting on Quentin or Luster or somebody. Here, I'll call her. Wait." But she went to the head of the stairs and called.
"Quentin ain't come yet," Dilsey says.
"Well, I'll have to get on back," I says. "I can get a sandwich downtown." "I don't want to interfere with Dilsey's arrangements," I says. Well, that got us started again, with Dilsey hobbling and mumbling back and forth, saying,
all right, I's putting it on as fast as I can." "I try to please you all," Mother says. "I try to make things as easy for you as I can."
"I'm not complaining, am I?" I says. "Have I said a word except I had to go back to work?"
"I know," she says. "I know you haven't had the chance the others had, that you've had to bury yourself in a little country store. I wanted you to get ahead. I knew your father would never realize that you were the only one who had any business sense, and then when everything else failed, I believed that when she married, and Herbert, after his promise...
Well, he was probably lying, too, I says. He may not have even had a bank, and if he had, I don't reckon he'd have to come all the way to Mississippi to get a man for it.
We ate a while. I could hear Ben in the kitchen, where Luster was feeding him. Like I say, if we've got to feed another mouth and she won't take that money, why not send him down to Jackson? He'll be happier there with people like him. I says God knows there's little enough room for pride in this family, but it don't take much pride to not like to see a 30-year-old man playing around the yard with a nigger boy, running up and down the fence and lowing like a cow whenever they play golf over there. I says if they'd send him to Jackson at first, we'd all be better off today. I says, you've done your duty by him. You've done all anybody can expect of you, and more than most folks would do. So why not send him there and get that much benefit out of the taxes we pay? Then she says, I'll be gone soon. I know I'm just a burden to you. And I says, you've been saying that so long that I'm beginning to believe you. Only I says, you'd better be sure not let me know you're gone, because I'll sure have him on number 17 that night. And I says, I think I know a place where they'll take her, too, and the name of it's not Milk Street and Honey Avenue, either. Then she begun to cry, and I says, all right, I have as much pride about my kinfolks as anybody, even if I don't always know where they come from. We ate for a while. Mother sent Dilsey to the front to look for Quentin again. I keep telling you she's not coming to dinner, I says. She knows better than that, Mother says. She knows I don't permit her to run about the streets and not come home at mealtime. Did you look good, Dilsey? Don't let her then, I says. What can I do? She says, you have all of you flouted me, always. If you wouldn't come interfering, I'd make her mind, I says. It wouldn't take me but about one day to straighten her out. You'd be too brutal with her, she says. You have your Uncle Maury's temper. That reminded me of the letter. I took it out and handed it to her. You won't have to open it, I says. The bank will let you know how much it is this time. It's addressed to you, she says. Go on and open it, I says. She opened it and read it and handed it to me. My dear young nephew, it says, you will be glad to learn that I am now in a position to avail myself of an opportunity regarding which, for reasons which I shall make obvious to you, I shall not go into details until I have an opportunity to divulge it to you in a more secure manner. My business experience has taught me to be chary of committing anything of a confidential nature to any more concrete medium than speech, and my extreme precaution in this instance should give you some inkling of its value. Needless to say, I have just completed a most exhaustive examination of all its phases, and I feel no hesitancy in telling you that it is the sort of golden chance that comes but once in a lifetime, and I now see clearly before me that goal toward which I have long and unflaggingly striven, i.e. the ultimate solidification of my affairs, by which I may restore to its rightful position that family of which I have the honor to be the sole remaining male descendant, that family in which I have ever included your lady mother and her children. As it so happens, I am not quite in a position to avail myself of this opportunity to the uttermost which it warrants, but rather than go out of the family to do so, I am today drawing upon your mother's bank for the small sum necessary to complement my own initial investment, for which I herewith enclose, as a matter of formality, my note of hand at 8% per annum. Needless to say, this is merely a formality to secure your mother in the event of that circumstance of which man is ever the plaything and sport. For naturally I shall employ this sum as though it were my own, and so permit your mother to avail herself of this opportunity, which my exhaustive investigation has shown to be a bonanza, if you will permit the vulgarism, of the first water and purest ray serene. This is in confidence, you will understand, from one businessman to another. We will harvest our own vineyards, eh? And knowing your mother's delicate health and that timorousness which such delicately nurtured southern ladies would naturally feel regarding matters of business, and their charming proneness to divulge unwittingly such matters in conversation, I would suggest that you do not mention it to her at all. On second thought, I advise you not to do so. It might be better to simply restore this sum to the bank at some future date, say, in a lump sum with the other small sums for which I am indebted to her, and say nothing about it at all. It is our duty to shield her from the crass material world as much as possible. Your affectionate uncle, Maury L. Bascom. What do you want to do about it? I says, flipping it across the table. I know you grudge what I give him, she says. It's your money, I says. If you want to throw it to the birds, even, it's your business.
He's my own brother, Mother says. He's the last Bascom. When we are gone, there won't be any more of them.
That'll be hard on somebody, I guess, I says.
All right, I says. It's your money. Do as you please with it.
You want me to tell the bank to pay it?
I know you begrudge him, she says. I realize the burden on your shoulders. When I'm gone, it will be easier on you.
I could make it easier right now, I says.
All right, I won't mention it again. Move all bedlam in here if you want to.
He's your own brother, she says, even if he is afflicted.
I'll take your bank book, I says. I'll draw my check today.
He kept you waiting 6 days, she says. Are you sure the business is sound? It seems strange to me that a solvent business cannot pay its employees promptly.
He's all right, I says, safe as a bank. I tell him not to bother about mine until we get done collecting every month. That's why it's late sometimes.
I just couldn't bear to have you lose the little I had to invest for you, she says. I've often thought that Earl is not a good businessman. I know he doesn't take you into his confidence to the extent that your investment in the business should warrant. I'm going to speak to him.
No, you let him alone, I says. It's his business.
You have $1,000 in it.
You let him alone, I says. I'm watching things. I have your power of attorney. It'll be all right.
You don't know what a comfort you are to me, she says. You have always been my pride and joy. But when you came to me of your own accord and insisted on banking your salary each month in my name, I thanked God it was you left me if they had to be taken.
They were all right, I says. They did the best they could, I reckon.
When you talk that way, I know you were thinking bitterly of your father's memory, she says. You have a right to, I suppose, but it breaks my heart to hear you.
I got up. If you've got any crying to do, I says, you'll have to do it alone, because I've got to get on back. I'll get the bank book.
I'll get it, she says.
Keep still, I says, I'll get it. I went upstairs and got the bank book out of her desk and went back to town. I went to the bank and deposited the check and the money order and the other 10 and stopped at the telegraph office. It was 1 point above the opening. I'd already lost 13 points, all because she had to come helling in there at 12, worrying me about that letter.
What time did that report come in? I says.
About an hour ago, he says.
An hour ago, I says, what are we paying you for?
I says, weekly reports? How do you expect a man to do anything? The whole damn top could blow off and we'd not know it.
I don't expect you to do anything, he says. They changed that law making folks play the cotton market.
They have, I says. I hadn't heard. They must have sent the news out over the Western Union.
I went back to the store. 13 points. Damn, if I believe anybody knows anything about the damn thing except the ones that sit back in those New York offices and watch the country suckers come up and beg them to take their money.
Well, a man that just calls shows he has no faith in himself. And like I say, if you aren't going to take the advice, what's the use in paying money for it? Besides, these people are right up there on the ground. They know everything that's going on.
I could feel the telegram in my pocket. I'd just have to prove that they were using the telegraph company to defraud. That would constitute a bucket shop, and I wouldn't hesitate that long either. Only be damned if it doesn't look like a company as big and rich as the Western Union could get a market report out on time. Half as quick as they'll get a wire to you saying your account closed out. But what the hell do they care about the people? They're hand in glove with that New York crowd. Anybody could see that. When I came in, Earl looked at his watch, but he didn't say anything until the customer was gone. Then he says, "You go home to dinner?" "I had to go to the dentist," I says, "because it's not any of his business where I eat, but I've got to be in the store with him all the afternoon." And with his jaw running off after all I've stood. You take a little 2x4 country storekeeper, like I say, it takes a man with just $500 to worry about it $50,000 worth.
"You might have told me," he says, "I expected you back right away."
"I'll trade you this tooth and give you $10 to boot any time," I says. "Our agreement was an hour for dinner," I says, "and if you don't like the way I do, you know what you can do about it."
"I've known that some time," he says. "If it hadn't been for your mother, I'd have done it before now, too. She's a lady I've got a lot of sympathy for, Jason. Too bad some other folks I know can't say as much."
"Then you can keep it," I says. "When we need any sympathy, I'll let you know in plenty of time."
"I've protected you about that business a long time, Jason," he says.
"Yes," I says, letting him go on, listening to what he would say before I shut him up.
"I believe I know more about where that automobile came from than she does." "You think so, do you?" I says. "When are you going to spread the news that I stole it from my mother?" "I don't say anything," he says. "I know you have her power of attorney, and I know she still believes that $1,000 is in this business." "All right," I says, "since you know so much, I'll tell you a little more. Go to the bank and ask them whose account I've been depositing $160 on the first of every month for 12 years. "I don't say anything," he says. "I just ask you to be a little more careful after this." I never said anything more. It doesn't do any good. I found that when a man gets into a rut, the best thing you can do is let him stay there. And when a man gets it in his head that he's got to tell something on you for your own good, good night. I'm glad I haven't got the sort of conscience I've got to nurse like a sick puppy all the time. If I'd ever be as careful over anything as he is to keep his little shirt tail full of business from making him more than 8%, I reckon he thinks they'd get him on the usury law if he netted more than 8%. What the hell chance has a man got tied down in a town like this and to a business like this? Why, I could take his business in 1 year and fix him so he'd never have to work again, only he'd give it all away to the church or something. If there's one thing that gets under my skin, it's a damn hypocrite. A man that thinks anything he don't understand all about must be crooked, and the first chance he gets, he's morally bound to tell the third party what's none of his business to tell. Like I say, if I thought every time a man did something I didn't know all about, he was bound to be a crook, I reckon I wouldn't have any trouble finding something back there on those books that you wouldn't see any use for running and telling somebody I thought ought to know about it, when for all I knew they might know a damn sight more about it now than I did. And if they didn't, it was damn little of my business anyway. And he says, "My book's open to anybody. Anybody that has any claim or believes she has any claim on this business can go back there and welcome." "Sure, you won't tell," I says. "You couldn't square your conscience with that. You'll just take her back there and let her find it. You won't tell yourself." "I'm not trying to meddle in your business," he says. "I know you missed out on some things like Quentin had. But your mother has had a misfortunate life, too, and if she was to come in here and ask me why you quit, I'd have to tell her. It ain't that $1,000, you know that. It's because a man never gets anywhere if fact and his ledgers don't square. And I'm not going to lie to anybody, for myself or anybody else." "Well, then," I says, "I reckon that conscience of yours is a more valuable clerk than I am. It don't have to go home at noon to eat. Only don't let it interfere with my appetite," I says. "Because how the hell can I do anything right with that damn family and her not making any effort to control her nor any of them, like that time when she happened to see one of them kissing Caddy and all next day she went around the house in a black dress and a veil, and even Father couldn't get her to say a word except crying and saying her little daughter was dead and Caddy about 15 then, only in 3 years she'd be wearing haircloth or probably sandpaper at that rate. Do you think I can afford to have her running about the streets with every drummer that comes to town," I says, "and them telling the new ones up and down the road where to pick up a hot one when they made Jefferson? I haven't got much pride. I can't afford it with the kitchen full of niggers to feed and robbing the state asylum of its star freshmen. Blood," I says, "governors and generals. It's a damn good thing we never had any kings and presidents. We'd all be down there, Jackson, chasing butterflies." I says, "It'd be bad enough if it was mine. I'd at least be sure it was a bastard to begin with. And now even the Lord doesn't know that for certain, probably." So after a while I heard the band start up, and then they begun to clear out, headed for the show, every one of them, haggling over a 20-cent hamstring to save 15 cents, so they can give it to a bunch of Yankees that come in and pay maybe $10 for the privilege. I went out to the back. "Well," I says, "if you don't look out, that bolt will grow into your hand. And then I'm going to take an axe and chop it out. What do you reckon the boll weevils'll eat if you don't get those cultivators in shape to raise them a crop?" I says. "Sage grass?" "Dem folks sure do play dem horns," he says. "Tell me man in dat show can play a tune on a handsaw. Pick it like a banjo." "Listen," I says, "do you know how much that show'll spend in this town?" "About $10," I says. "The $10 Buck Turpin has in his pocket right now." "What they give Mr. Buck $10 for?" he says. "For the privilege of showing here," I says. "You can put the balance of what they'll spend in your eye." "You mean they pays $10 just to give they show here?" he says. "That's all," I says. "And how much do you reckon?" "Great day," he says. "You mean to tell me they charging them to let them show here? I'd pay $10 to see that man pick that saw if I had to. I figures that tomorrow morning I'd be still owing them $9.06 at that rate." And then a Yankee will talk your head off about niggers getting ahead. Get them ahead, what I say. get them so far ahead you can't find one south of Louisville with a bloodhound. Because when I told him about how they'd pick up Saturday night and carry off at least $1,000 out of the county, he says, I don't begrudge 'em. I can sure afford my 2 bits. 2 bits, hell, I says, that don't begin it. How about the dime of 15 cents you'll spend for a damn 2-cent box of candy or something? How about the time you're wasting right now listening to that band? That's the truth, he says. Well, if I lives 12 night, it's going to be 2 bits more they're taking out of town, that sure. Then you're a fool, I says. Well, he says, I don't dispute that neither. If that is a crime, all chain gangs wouldn't be black. Well, just about that time, I happened to look up the alley and saw her. When I stepped back and looked at my watch, I didn't notice at the time who he was because I was looking at the watch. It was just 2:30, 45 minutes before anybody but me expected her to be out. So when I looked around the door, the first thing I saw was the red tie he had on, and I was thinking, what the hell kind of a man would wear a red tie? But she was sneaking along the alley, watching the door, so I wasn't thinking anything about him until they had gone past. I was wondering if she'd have so little respect for me that she'd not only play out of school when I told her not to, but would walk right past the store, daring me not to see her. Only she couldn't see into the door because the sun fell straight into it, and it was like trying to see through an automobile searchlight. So I stood there and watched her go on past, with her face painted up like a damn clown's and her hair all gummed and twisted, and a dress that if a woman had come outdoors, even on Gayoso or Beale Street when I was a young fellow with no more than that to cover her legs and behind, she'd been thrown in jail. I'll be damned if they don't dress like they were trying to make every man they passed on the street want to reach out and clap his hand on it. And so I was thinking what kind of a damn man would wear a red tie, when all of a sudden I knew he was one of those show folks, well as if she told me. Well, I can stand a lot. If I couldn't, damn if I wouldn't be in a hell of a fix. So when they turned the corner, I jumped down and followed. Me, without any hat, in the middle of the afternoon, having to chase up and down back alleys because of my mother's good name. Like I say, you can't do anything with a woman like that if she's got it in her. If it's in her blood, you can't do anything with her. The only thing you can do is to get rid of her, let her go on and live with her own sort. I went on to the street, but they were out of sight. And there I was, without any hat, looking like I was crazy, too. Like a man would naturally think, one of them is crazy and another one drowned himself and the other one was turned out into the street by a husband. What's the reason the rest of them are not crazy, too? All the time I could see them watching me like a hawk, waiting for a chance to say, well, I'm not surprised. I expected it all the time. The whole family's crazy. Selling land to send him to Harvard and paying taxes to support a state university all the time that I never saw except twice at a baseball game, and not letting her daughter's name be spoken on the place until after a while Father wouldn't even come downtown anymore but just sat there all day with the decanter. I could see the bottom of his nightshirt and his bare legs and hear the decanter clinking. Until finally T.P. had to pour it for him. And she says, you have no respect for your father's memory. And I says, I don't know why not. It sure is preserved well enough to last. Only if I'm crazy, too, God knows what I'll do about it. Just to look at water makes me sick, and I'd just as soon swallow gasoline as a glass of whiskey. And Lorraine telling them he may not drink, but if you don't believe he's a man, I can tell you how to find out, she says. If I catch you fooling with any of these whores, you know what I'll do, she says. I'll whip her, grabbing at her. I'll whip her as long as I can find her, she says. And I says, if I don't drink, that's my business. But have you ever found me short? I says, I'll buy you enough beer to take a bath in if you want it, because I've got every respect for a good, honest whore, because with mother's health and the position I try to uphold, to have her with no more respect for what I try to do for her than to make her name and my mother's name a byword in the town. She had dodged out of sight somewhere. Saw me coming and dodged into another alley, running up and down the alleys with a damn showman in a red tie that everybody would look at and think what kind of a damn man would wear a red tie. Well, the boy kept speaking to me, and so I took the telegram without knowing I'd taken it. I didn't realize what it was until I was signing for it, and I tore it open without even caring much what it was. I knew all the time what it'd be, I reckon. That was the only thing else that could happen, especially holding it up until I'd already had the check entered on the passbook. I don't see how a city no bigger than New York can hold enough people to take the money away from us country suckers. Work like hell all day every day, send them your money and get a little piece of paper back. Your account closed at 20.62. Teasing you along, letting you pile up a little paper profit, then bang, your account closed at 20.62. And if that wasn't enough, paying $10 a month to somebody to tell you how to lose it fast, that either don't know anything about it or is in cahoots with the telegraph company. Well, I'm done with them. They've sucked me in for the last time. Any fool except a fella that hasn't got any more sense than to take a Jew's word for anything could tell the market was going up all the time, with the whole damn delta about to be flooded again and the cotton washed right out of the ground like it was last year. Let it wash a man's crop out of the ground year after year, and them up there in Washington spending $50,000 a day keeping an army in Nicaragua or someplace. Of course it'll overflow again, and then cotton'll be worth 30 cents a pound. Well, I just want to hit them one time and get my money back. I don't want a killing. Only these small-town gamblers are out for that. I just want my money back that these damned Jews have gotten with all their guaranteed inside dope. Then I'm through. They can kiss my foot for every other red cent of mine they get. I went back to the store. It was 3:30 almost. Damn little time to do anything in, but then I'm used to that. I never had to go to Harvard to learn that. The band had quit playing. Got them all inside now, and they wouldn't have to waste any more wind. Earl says, he found you, did he? He was in here with it a while ago. I thought you were out back somewhere. Yes, I says, I got it. They couldn't keep it away from me all afternoon. The town's too small. I've got to go out home a minute. I says, you can dock me if it'll make you feel any better. Go ahead, he says, I can handle it now. No bad news, I hope. You'll have to go to the telegraph office and find that out, I says. They'll have time to tell you I haven't. I just asked, he says. Your mother knows she can depend on me. She'll appreciate it, I says. I won't be gone any longer than I have to. Take your time, he says. I can handle it now. You go ahead. I got the car and went home. Once this morning, twice at noon, and now again, with her, and having to chase all over town, and having to beg them to let me eat a little of the food I'm paying for. Sometimes I think, what's the use of anything? With the precedent I've been set, I must be crazy to keep on. And now I reckon I'll get home just in time to take a nice long drive after a basket of tomatoes or something, and then have to go back to town smelling like a camphor factory so my head won't explode right on my shoulders. I keep telling her there's not a damn thing in that aspirin except flour and water for imaginary invalids. I says, you don't know what a headache is. I says, you think I'd fool with that damn car at all if it depended on me? I says, I can get along without one. I've learned to get along without lots of things. But if you want to risk yourself in that old worn-out Surrey with a half-grown nigger boy, all right. Because I says, God looks after Ben's kind. God knows he ought to do something for him. But if you think I'm going to trust $1,000 worth of delicate machinery to a half-grown nigger, or a grown one either, you'd better buy him one yourself. Because, I says, you like to ride in the car, and you know you do. Dilsey said she was in the house. I went on into the hall and listened, but I didn't hear anything. I went upstairs, but just as I passed her door, she called me. I just wanted to know who it was, she says. I'm here alone so much that I hear every sound. You don't have to stay here, I says. You could spend the whole day visiting like other women if you wanted to. She came to the door. I thought maybe you were sick, she says, having to hurry through your dinner like you did. Better luck next time, I says. What do you want? Is anything wrong, she says. What could be, I says. Can't I come home in the middle of the afternoon without upsetting the whole house? Have you seen Quentin, she says. She's in school, I says. It's 3:00, she says. I heard the clock strike at least 30 minutes ago. She ought to be home by now. Ought she? I says. When have you ever seen her before dark? She ought to be home, she says. When I was a girl. You had somebody to make you behave yourself, I says. She hasn't. I can't do anything with her, she says. I've tried and I've tried. And you won't let me for some reason, I says, so you ought to be satisfied. I went on to my room. I turned the key easy and stood there until the knob turned. Then she says, Jason. What? I says. I just thought something was wrong. Not in here, I says. You've come to the wrong place. I don't mean to worry you, she says. I'm glad to hear that, I says. I wasn't sure. I thought I might have been mistaken. Do you want anything? After a while she says, no, not anything. Then she went away. I took the box down and counted out the money and hid the box again and unlocked the door and went out. I thought about the camphor, but it would be too late now anyway. And I'd just have one more round trip. She was at her door waiting. "'You want anything from town?' I says.
"'No,' she says. "'I don't mean to meddle in your affairs, "'but I don't know what I'd do if anything happened to you, Jason.'
"'I'm all right,' I says. "'Just a headache.'
"'I wish you'd take some aspirin,' she says. "'I know you're not going to stop using the car.'
"'What's the car got to do with it?' I says. "'How can a car give a man a headache?'
"'You know gasoline always made you sick,' she says. "'Ever since you were a child, I wish you'd take some aspirin.'
"'Keep on wishing it,' I says. "'It won't hurt you.'
I got in the car and started back to town. I just turned onto the street when I saw a Ford come helling toward me. All of a sudden it stopped. I could hear the wheels sliding, and it slewed around and backed and whirled, and just as I was thinking what the hell they were up to, I saw that red tie. Then I recognized her face looking back through the window. It whirled into the alley. I saw it turn again, but when I got to the back street, it was just disappearing, running like hell. I saw red. When I recognized that red tie, after all I had told her, I forgot about everything. I never thought about my head even until I came to the first forks and had to stop. Yet we spend money and spend money on roads, and damn if it isn't like trying to drive over a sheet of corrugated iron roofing. I'd like to know how a man could be expected to keep up with even a wheelbarrow. I think too much of my car. I'm not going to hammer it to pieces like it was a Ford. Chances were they had stolen it anyway, so why should they give a damn? Like I say, blood always tells. If you've got blood like that in you, you'll do anything. I says whatever claim you believe she has on you has already been discharged. I says, from now on, you have only yourself to blame, because you know what any sensible person would do. I says, if I've got to spend half my time being a damn detective, at least I'll go where I can get paid for it. So I had to stop there at the forks. Then I remembered it. It felt like somebody was inside with a hammer beating on it. I says, I've tried to keep you from being worried by her. I says, as far as I'm concerned, let her go to hell as fast as she pleases, and the sooner the better. I says, what else do you expect, except every damn drummer and cheap show that comes to town, because even these town jelly beans give her the go-by now. You don't know what goes on, I says. You don't hear the talk that I hear, and you can just bet I shut them up, too. I says, my people owned slaves here when you were all running little shirt-tail country stores and farming land no nigger would look at on shares. If they ever farmed it. It's a good thing the Lord did something for this country. The folks that live on it never have. Friday afternoon, and from right here I could see 3 miles of land that hadn't even been broken, and every able-bodied man in the county and town at that show. I might have been a stranger starving to death, and there wasn't a soul in sight to ask which way to town, even. And she trying to get me to take aspirin. I says, when I eat bread, I'll do it at the table. I says, you always talking about how much you give up for us when you could buy 10 new dresses a year on the money you spend for those damn patent medicines. It's not something to cure it I need, it's just an even break, not to have to have them. But as long as I have to work 10 hours a day to support a kitchen full of niggers in the style they're accustomed to and send them to the show wherever other nigger in the county, only he was late already. By the time he got there, it'd be over. After a while, he got up to the car, and when I finally got it through his head if two people in a Ford had passed him, he said yes. So I went on, and when I came to where the wagon road turned off, I could see the tire tracks. Abe Russell was in his lot, but I didn't bother to ask him, and I hadn't got out of sight of his barn hardly when I saw the Ford. They had tried to hide it. Done about as well at it as she did at everything else she did. Like I say, it's not that I object to so much. Maybe she can't help that. It's because she hasn't even got enough consideration for her own family to have any discretion. I'm afraid all the time I'll run into them right in the middle of the street or under a wagon on the square like a couple of dogs. I parked and got out, and now I'd have to go way around and cross a plowed field, the only one I'd seen since I left town, with every step like somebody was walking along behind me hit me on the head with a club. I kept thinking that when I got across the field, at least I'd have something level to walk on that wouldn't jolt me every step. But when I got into the woods, it was full of underbrush, and I had to twist around through it. And then I came to a ditch full of briars. I went along it for a while, but it got thicker and thicker, and all the time Earl probably telephoning home about where I was and getting Mother all upset again. When I finally got through, I'd had to wind around so much that I had to stop and figure out just where the car would be. I knew they wouldn't be far from it, just under the closest bush, so I turned and worked back toward the road. Then I couldn't tell just how far I was, so I'd have to stop and listen, and then with my legs not using so much blood, it would all go into my head like it would explode any minute.
and then the sun getting down to just where it could shine straight into my eyes and my ears ringing so I couldn't hear anything. I went on, trying to move quiet. Then I heard a dog or something, and I knew that when he scented me, he'd have to come helling up, then it would be all off. I'd gotten beggar lice and twigs and stuff all over me, inside my clothes and shoes and all. And then I happened to look around, and I had my hand right on a bunch of poison oak. The only thing I couldn't understand was why it was just poison oak and not a snake or something. So I didn't even bother to move it. I just stood there until the dog went away. Then I went on. I didn't have any idea where the car was now. I couldn't think about anything except my head. And I'd just stand in one place and sort of wonder if I'd really seen a Ford even, and I didn't even care much whether I had or not. Like I say, let her lay out all day and all night with everything in town that wears pants. What do I care? I don't owe anything to anybody that has no more consideration for me that wouldn't be a damn bit above planting that Ford there and making me spend a whole afternoon and Earl taking her back there and showing her the books just because he's too damn virtuous for this world. I says, you'll have one hell of a time in heaven without anybody's business to meddle in. Only don't you ever let me catch you at it, I says. I close my eyes to it because of your grandmother. But just you let me catch you doing it one time on this place where my mother lives. These damn little slick-head squirts, thinking they're raising so much hell. I'll show them something about hell, I says, and you too. I'll make him think that damn red tie's the latch string to hell if he thinks he can run the woods with my niece. With the sun and all in my eyes and my blood going so I kept thinking every time my head would go on and burst and get it over with. With briars and things grabbing at me. Then I came onto the sand ditch where they had been, and I recognized the tree where the car was, and just as I got out of the ditch and started running, I heard the car start. It went off fast, blowing the horn. They kept on blowing it, like it was saying, yeah, 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 going out of sight. I got to the road just in time to see it go out of sight. By the time I got up to where my car was, they were clean out of sight, the horn still blowing. Well, I never thought anything about it, except I was saying run, run back to town, run home and try to convince Mother that I never saw you in that car. Try to make her believe that I don't know who he was. Try to make her believe that I didn't miss 10 feet of catching you in that ditch. Try to make her believe you were standing up, too. It kept on saying, yeah, 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 getting fainter and fainter. Then it quit, and I could hear a cow lowing up at Russell's barn. And still I never thought. I went up to the door and opened it and raised my foot. I kind of thought then that the car was leaning a little more than the slant of the road would be, but I never found it out until I got in and started off. Well, I just sat there. It was getting on towards sundown, and town was about 5 miles. They never even had guts enough to puncture it, to jab a hole in it. They just let the air out. I just stood there for a while, thinking about that kitchen full of niggers, and not one of them had time to lift a tire onto the rack and screw up a couple of bolts. It was kind of funny because even she couldn't have seen far enough ahead to take the pump out on purpose, unless she thought about it while he was letting out the air, maybe. But what it probably was somebody took it out and gave it to Ben to play with for a squirt gun, because they'd take the whole car to pieces if he wanted it. And Dilsey says, ain't nobody touched your car. What do we want fool with hit fur? And I says, you're a nigger. You're lucky, do you know it? I says, I'll swap with you any day because it takes a white man not to have any more sense than to worry about what a little slut of a girl does. I walked up to Russell's. He had a pump. That was just an oversight on their part, I reckon. Only I still couldn't believe she'd have had the nerve to. I kept thinking that. I don't know why it is I can't seem to learn that a woman'll do anything. I kept thinking, let's forget for a while how I feel toward you and how you feel toward me. I just wouldn't do you this way. I wouldn't do you this way no matter what you'd done to me. Because like I say, blood is blood and you can't get around it. It's not playing a joke that any 8-year-old boy could have thought of. It's letting your own uncle be laughed at by a man that would wear a red tie. They come into town and call us all a bunch of hicks and think it's too small to hold them. Well, he doesn't know just how right he is. And her too. If that's the way she feels about it, she better keep right on going and a damn good riddance. I stopped and returned Russell's pump and drove on to town. I went to the drugstore and got a shot, and then I went on to the telegraph office. It had closed at 20.21, 40 points down. $40 times $5. Buy something with that if you can. And she'll say, I've got to have it. I've just got to. And I'll say, that's too bad. You'll have to try somebody else. I haven't got any money. I've been too busy to make any. I just looked at him. I'll tell you some news, I says. You'll be astonished to learn that I am interested in the cotton market, I says. That never occurred to you, did it? I did my best to deliver it, he says. I tried the store twice and called up your house, but they didn't know where you were, he says, digging in the drawer. Deliver what? I says. He handed me a telegram. What time did this come? I says. About 3:30, he says. And now it's 5:10, I says. I tried to deliver it, he says. I couldn't find you. That's not my fault, is it? I says. I opened it, just to see what kind of a lie they'd tell me this time. They must be in one hell of a shape if they've got to come all the way to Mississippi to steal $10 a month. Sell, it says. The market will be unstable with a general downward tendency. Do not be alarmed following government report. How much would a message like this cost? I says. He told me. They paid it, he says. Then I owe them that much, I says. I already knew this. Send this collect, I says, taking a blank. Buy, I wrote, market just on point of blowing its head off. Occasional flurries for purpose of hooking a few more country suckers who haven't got into the telegraph office yet. Do not be alarmed. Send that collect, I says. He looked at the message, then he looked at the clock. Market closed an hour ago, he says. Well, I says, that's not my fault either. I didn't invent it, I just bought a little of it while under the impression that the telegraph company would keep me informed as to what it was doing. A report is posted whenever it comes in, he says. Yes, I says, and in Memphis they have it on a blackboard every 10 seconds, I says. I was within 67 miles of there once this afternoon. He looked at the message. You want to send this? He says. I still haven't changed my mind, I says. I wrote the other one out and counted the money. And this one, too, if you're sure you can spell B-U-Y. I went back to the store. I could hear the band from down the street. Prohibition's a fine thing. Used to be they'd come in Saturday with just one pair of shoes in the family and him wearing them. And they'd go down to the express office and get his package. Now they all go to the show barefooted, with the merchants in the door like a row of tigers or something in a cage watching them pass. Earl says, I hope it wasn't anything serious. What? I says. He looked at his watch. Then he went to the door and looked at the courthouse clock. You ought to have a dollar watch, I says. It won't cost you so much to believe it's lying each time. What? He says. Nothing, I says. Hope I haven't inconvenienced you. We were not busy much, he says. They all went to the show. It's all right. If it's not all right, I says, you know what you can do about it. I said it was all right, he says. I heard you, I says, and if it's not all right, you know what you can do about it. Do you want to quit? He says. It's not my business, I says. My wishes don't matter. But don't get the idea that you are protecting me by keeping me. You'd be a good businessman if you'd let yourself, Jason, he says. At least I can tend to my own business and let other people's alone, I says. I don't know why you are trying to make me fire you, he says. You know you could quit any time, and there wouldn't be any hard feelings between us. Maybe that's why I don't quit, I says. As long as I tend to my job, that's what you are paying me for. I went on to the back and got a drink of water and went on out to the back door. Job had the cultivators all set up at last. It was quiet there, and pretty soon my head got a little easier. I could hear them singing now, and then the band played again. Well, let them get every quarter and dime in the county. It was no skin off my back. I've done what I could. A man that can live as long as I have and not know when to quit is a fool, especially as it's no business of mine. If it was my own daughter now, it would be different because she wouldn't have time to. She'd have to work some to feed a few invalids and idiots and niggers, because how could I have the face to bring anybody there? I've too much respect for anybody to do that. I'm a man. I can stand it. It's my own flesh and blood. And I'd like to see the color of the man's eyes that would speak disrespectful of any woman that was my friend. It's these damn good women that do it. I'd like to see the good church-going woman that's half as square as Lorraine, whore or no whore. Like I say, if I was to get married, you'd go up like a balloon, and you know it. And she says I want you to be happy to have a family of your own, not to slave your life away for us. But I'll be gone soon, and then you can take a wife, but you'll never find a woman who is worthy of you. And I says, yes, I could. You'd get right up out of your grave, you know you would. I says, no, thank you, I have all the women I can take care of now. If I married a wife, she'd probably turn out to be a hophead or something. That's all we lack in this family, I says. The sun was down beyond the Methodist church now, and the pigeons were flying back and forth around the steeple, and when the band stopped, I could hear them cooing. It hadn't been 4 months since Christmas, and yet they were almost as thick as ever. I reckon Parson Waldorf was getting a belly full of them now. You'd have thought we were shooting people with him making speeches and even holding onto a man's gun when they came over. Talking about peace on earth, goodwill toward all, and not a sparrow can fall to earth. But what does he care how thick they get? He hasn't got anything to do. What does he care what time it is? He pays no taxes. He doesn't have to see his money gone every year to have the courthouse clock cleaned to where it'll run. They had to pay a man $45 to clean it. I counted over 100 half-hatched pigeons on the ground. You'd think they'd have sense enough to leave town. It's a good thing I don't have any more ties than a pigeon, I'll say that. The band was playing again, a loud, fast tune like they were breaking up. I reckon they'd be satisfied now. Maybe they'd have enough music to entertain them while they drove 14 or 15 miles home and unharnessed in the dark and fed the stock and milked. All they'd have to do would be to whistle the music and tell the jokes to the livestock in the barn, and then they could count up how much they'd made by not taking the stock to the show, too. They could figure that if a man had 5 children and 7 mules, he cleared a quarter by taking his family to the show. Just like that. Earl came back with a couple of packages. "Here's some more stuff going out," he says. "Where's Uncle Job?" "Gone to the show, I imagine," I says, "unless you watched him." "He doesn't slip off," he says. "I can depend on him." "Meaning me by that," I says. He went to the door and looked out, listening. "That's a good band," he says. "It's about time they were breaking up, I'd say." "Unless they're going to spend the night there," I says. The swallows had begun, and I could hear the sparrows beginning to swarm in the trees in the courthouse yard. Every once in a while a bunch of them would come swirling around inside above the roof, then go away. They are as big a nuisance as the pigeons, to my notion. You can't even sit in the courthouse yard for them. First thing you know, bing, right on your hat. But it would take a millionaire to afford to shoot them at 5 cents a shot. If they just put a little poison out there in the square, they'd get rid of them in a day, because if a merchant can't keep his stock from running around the square, he'd better try to deal in something besides chickens, something that don't eat, like plows or onions. And if a man don't keep his dogs up, he either don't want it or he hasn't any business with one. Like I say, if all the businesses in town are run like country businesses, you're going to have a country town. "It won't do you any good if they have broke up," I says. "They'll have to hitch up and take out to get home by midnight as it is." "Well," he says, "they enjoy it. Let them spend a little money on a show now and then. A hill farmer works pretty hard and gets mighty little for it." "There's no law making them farm in the hills," I says, "or anywhere else." "Where would you and me be if it wasn't for the farmers?" he says. "I'd be home right now," I says, "lying down with an ice pack on my head." "You have these headaches too often," he says. "Why don't you have your teeth examined good? Did he go over them all this morning?" "Did who?" I says. "You said you went to the dentist this morning. Do you object to my having the headache on your time?" I says. "Is that it?" They were crossing the alley now, coming up from the show. "There they come," he says. "I reckon I better get up front." He went on. "It's a curious thing how, no matter what's wrong with you, a man'll tell you to have your teeth examined, and a woman'll tell you to get married. It always takes a man that never made much at anything to tell you how to run your business, though. Like these college professors without a whole pair of socks to his name, telling you how to make $1 million in 10 years. And a woman that couldn't even get a husband can always tell you how to raise a family." Old man Job came up with the wagon. After a while, he got through wrapping the lines around the whip socket. "Well," I says, "was it a good show?" "I ain't been yet," he says, "but I can be arrested in that tent tonight, though." "Like hell you haven't," I says. "You been away from here since 3 o'clock. Mr. Earl was just back here looking for you." "I've been tending to my business," he says. "Mr. Earl knows where I've been." You make him fool him, I says. I won't tell on you. Then he's the onliest man here I'd try to fool, he says. Well, I won't waste my time fooling a man what I don't care whether I sees him Saturday night or not. I won't try to fool you, he says. You too smart for me. Yes, sir, he says, looking busy as hell, putting 5 or 6 little packages into the wagon. You's too smart for me. Ain't a man in this town can keep up with you for smartness. You fools a man what's so smart he can't even keep up with hisself, he says, getting in the wagon and unwrapping the reins. Who's that? I says. That's Mr. Jason Compson, he says. Get up there, Dan. One of the wheels was just about to come off. I watched to see if he'd get out of the alley before it did. Just turn any vehicle over to a nigger, though. I says that old rattle-trap's just an eyesore, yet you'll keep it standing there in the carriage house 100 years just so that boy can ride to the cemetery once a week. I says he's not the first fellow that'll have to do things he doesn't want to do. I'd make him ride in that car like a civilized man or stay at home. What does he know about where he goes or what he goes in and us keeping a carriage and a horse so he can take a ride on Sunday afternoon? A lot Job cared whether the wheel came off or not, long as he wouldn't have too far to walk back. Like I say, the only place for them is in the field, where they'd have to work from sunup to sundown. They can't stand prosperity or an easy job. Let one stay around white people for a while, and he's not worth killing. They get so they can outguess you about work before your very eyes, like Roscus. The only mistake he ever made was he got careless one day and died. Shirking and stealing, and giving you a little more lip and a little more lip until someday you have to lay them out with a scantling or something. Well, it's Earl's business, but I'd hate to have my business advertised over this town by an old doddering nigger and a wagon that you thought every time I turned a corner it would come all to pieces. The sun was all high up in the air now, and inside it was beginning to get dark. I went up front. The square was empty. Earl was back closing the safe, and then the clock begun to strike. "You lock the back door," he says. I went back and locked it and came back. "I suppose you're going to the show tonight," he says. "I gave you those passes yesterday, didn't I?" "Yes," I says. "You want them back?" "No, no," he says. "I just forgot whether I gave them to you or not. No sense in wasting them." He locked the door and said good night and went on. The sparrows were still rattling away in the trees, but the square was empty except for a few cars. There was a Ford in front of the drugstore, but I didn't even look at it. I know when I've had enough of anything. I don't mind trying to help her, but I know when I've had enough. I guess I could teach Luster to drive it, then they could chase her all day long if they wanted to, and I could stay home and play with Ben. I went in and got a couple of cigars. Then I thought I'd have another headache shot for luck, and I stood and talked with them for a while. "Well," Max says, "I reckon you got your money on the Yankees this year." "What for?" I says. "The pennant," he says. "Not anything in the league can beat them." "Like hell there's not," I says. "They're shot," I says. "You think a team can be that lucky forever?" "I don't call it luck," Max says. "I wouldn't bet on any team that fellow Ruth played on," I says, "even if I knew it was going to win." "Yes," Max says. "I can name you a dozen men in either league who are more valuable than he is," I says. "What have you got against Ruth?" Max says. "Nothing," I says. "I haven't got anything against him. I don't even like the look of his picture." I went on out. The lights were coming on and people going along the streets toward home. Sometimes the sparrows never got still until full dark. The night they turned on the new lights around the courthouse, it waked them up, and they were flying around and blundering into the lights all night long. They kept it up 2 or 3 nights, then one morning they were all gone. Then after about 2 months, they all came back again. I drove on home. There were no lights in the house yet, but they'd all be looking out the windows, and Dilsey jawing away in the kitchen like it was her own food she was having to keep hot until I got there. You'd think to hear her that there wasn't but one supper in the world, and that was the one she had to keep back a few minutes.